Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. Well, I hear our music. It's not very loud here. Hey.
Welcome to the show that never ends. And just like my day, it just never seems to end. 21 hours and going strong, Seth and Sean Sports Radio, Blog Talk Radio, the Back Sports Page Radio Network. How you doing, Mr. Palmer?
I am doing well. I actually have to put you on mute for a second. I got to get some gas. I'll be right back.
The first and only time Sean has ever been silent. Let's enjoy this for what it is. As most of you know, I came back. Most of you know I was on my honeymoon. What you may not know is I came back about an hour and a half, 2 hours ago, and I am a little bit tired. But there is nothing that makes me happier than coming back and being able to talk football with you guys. If you're listening, I want to call in 760-283-0846. And, you know, what's interesting is I was off last week, obviously, because it didn't seem like a heck, it didn't seem to make too much sense to be calling in from Santorini, nor would I ever really want to. I did not get a chance. Unfortunately, my internet was a little spotty. I look forward to hearing about how the show went, assuming it went forward.
It went forward. Don't you worry. It went forward.
So how did the show go?
So the show went very well. There was definitely no animosity between the two of us. We were good-hearted souls, and overall, not a bad show. And for Mr. Kamen, I quote Nicolas Cage from Gone in 6 Seconds: "I'm a little tired and a little wired. And I think I deserve a little respect around here."
The first and only time Nicolas Cage will ever be quoted on a sports radio show, ladies and gentlemen. So, since I was unable to listen, what did you discuss last week? Was it college football preview? Since we kind of just didn't do one this year, it seems.
No. You have missed the boat, Mr. Cage. The college football preview is next week.
Woohoo!
Because
and then
I
the
would
pro football will be after.
I would never have a college football preview without you. Because, Lord knows, that's not my specialty.
I do have a question. Who is Mike Spears, and why did he pitch no-hitter? Who is this person?
Mike Spears has always been a very good strikeout pitcher, but his control has been lacking. He started a couple years ago with the Milwaukee Brewers, and he was traded to the Houston Astros in the last couple of weeks. So he has always had the potential for this type of game. He did have 3 walks, which is very, you know what, it's very expected of him to have that type of game of 3 walks. But he pitched very well. Look, the Astros are in the hunt, no question about it, in the National League West. And we talked a lot about baseball last week and some boxing with Mr. Isles to answer your question. He graced us with his presence. He befuddled me with a little bit of knowledge on boxing because Lord knows I know nothing about that. And we talked a little Metsies and it went very well. And again, you know, we chided a couple of weeks back that it was a great time to be a sports fan, at least a baseball fan, in New York. Seth, you know what? it's a great time to be a baseball fan in New York.
That it is. The Yankees seem to, at least temporarily, have been able to hold off the surging Blue Jays and maintain their slight first place lead. The Mets, you know, with Mr. Wright coming back and hitting a home run his first at bat in months. I don't know if you knew about that, but okay. And, you know, they're up, what, four games? And, you know, Washington just cannot seem to get a grasp on the division. It looks more and more like not only are Mets going to be playing relevant baseball in August, but they'll be playing relevant baseball in September and potentially October.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that, my friend. I am a big, big fan of that. You're right. They are looking very solid, and I think that they're going to make a good run at this. And you know what? Happy days are here again. The sky's above and clear again. So I am, it's a good time. It's a really good time to be a Mets fan. And Navarrete said the same thing last week. The captain coming back. But, you know, it's funny. Yesterday, you and I talk a lot about Halls of Fame. And we talk a lot about monuments and so forth. In the weekend, both yesterday and Saturday, the Yankees added two more to their illustrious cast of characters, tired numbers, as well as plaques in Monument Park, that being Jose Posada and Andy Pettit. I know your feelings on the Hall of Fame. These have been well documented. It is not the Hall of Good for you. It is the Hall of Fame. It is the best of the best. Do you feel, A, the same way about numbers being retired? And B, did these two deserve to have their numbers retired?
Numbers retired to me is not particular, is not. I guess it almost depends on the team. To me, Jorge Posada didn't deserve to have his number retired under any circumstance. I was reading comparisons of him to Thurman Munson, which kind of shook my head at. Jorge Posada was a good player. You know, had one or two very, very good years, but was a good player for the most part. You know, but he may not be in the top. He was not one of the top three. He may not have been one of the top five Yankee catchers of all time. And I'm not saying that as a detriment, as an insult. But when you have Munson and Elston Howard and Yogi Berra and Bill Dickey, and I'm sure I'm forgetting one or two because I'm a little bit tired, you know, I find it, I'm a little incredulous that, I mean, I knew it was coming, but I certainly don't. I'm not particularly sure it was warranted.
The ironic thing is that all those players, except for Howard, I believe, have had their numbers retired.
Yeah. And I believe Howard won an MVP, I think, in 63 or 64. I forget which one. And was one of the best. Okay. And was one of the best players in the league. He also had the first game, I believe, to cross the racial barrier.
Yep.
You know, Posada was a supplement. Now, again, he was, you know, what's his name? Howard was not, was not a Mantle, was not a Maris, was not a, you know, a Yogi on these early 60 teams. He was a complementary player, such as, so was Posada.
Yep.
So, I mean, to me, Posada does not belong there. Now, this is not a negative towards the Mets. But when you look at who are the Mets retired? Seaver, I'm assuming?
Well, you know all three. We've had this discussion.
Yeah, but
Gil
Hodges and Casey Stengel.
Yep,
right. So, to me, either, if you want to say the Mets, you know, and I'm sure there'll be one or two coming along the path, maybe a Mike Piazza. Maybe not.
No,
I don't know.
It. I'm telling you, I doubt Piazza gets retired. I mean, I really do. I doubt it. I think that I have always thought that. I'm the first. Oh, I just went the wrong way. Oh, well, I'm driving in the car, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, I just went north when I needed to go south. Oh, well. So the fact is, I think the retired numbers are you need to be the best of the best of that franchise, of the franchise, not necessarily the best of the best of all time, but certainly of that particular franchise. Now, franchise? I don't really think so. Posada certainly wasn't. And my feeling on them going into the pantheon of, and I use pantheon very liberally, the pantheon of numbers retired at plaques in Monument Park is the other guys that are in those, the other guys that have had their numbers retired or have plaques in Monument Park, I think are basically cheapened by the lesser scale guys that are in there now. Why is Tino Martinez and Paul O'Neill in Monument Park? I see no reason for either one of them. I see no reason for Pettit or Posada to have their number retired. If you want to retire Jeter's number, I'm with you, putting the legacy of those guys that are the greats by putting in guys that are not.
Not sure. I'm not quite sure about that, whether she puts the legacy or not. And I think Pettit's a little bit more of a difficult decision. Pettit was one of the best pitchers in baseball for many years. Not the best, but was a top 5 to 10, arguably top 5 to 10 pitcher for a while. Probably a little bit less, lower than that. Let me say top 10 to 15. Good clutch pitcher. And the Yankees' pitching legacy as opposed to their hitting legacy is not the same. Forgetting Rivera, their best pitcher probably of all time is Whitey Ford. Whitey Ford is a very good pitcher, Hall of Famer, but you don't hear him in the all-time greats either. Based on that, I have less of a problem with Pettit than I, even though Pettit was, admitted to using PEDs, less of a problem with Pettit than I do with Posada. But I kind of agree. I don't think either of them, I don't really see a great need for either of them having their numbers retired, but they've always been, the reality is there's always been that sentimentality around the core four, which I always thought was a little bit ridiculous because number one, why, is Bernie Williams not there for any particular reason just because he started 2 years earlier? Because he was a better player, I think, than Posada. Guys like O'Neill and like Brocious and all that, there was the core four, the whole idea of the core four, I think is a bit overrated in my mind.
Yeah, I agree with you. Look, you're not going to get any. Look, that was a fantastic team in every respect. That was a team. But there, besides Jeter, there are no Hall of Famers on that team.
Rivera's not a Hall of Famer?
Except for Rivera. Sorry, I forgot Rivera. Besides those two, there are no Hall of Famers, period. None. Maybe, Roger Clemens, but Roger Clemens, to me, is not.
That's a different situation. And I think you can argue David Cohen. But again, that's a different situation.
Yeah, you won't get me arguing David Cohen, and I'm a big David Cohen subscriber. But needless to say, I don't think you have a Hall. You can have a team. It's okay to have a team without a Hall of Famer. They are, look, I'll bring it to basketball because it's the only one that I'm coming off the top of my head. But the Detroit Pistons, when they won in 2004, did not have one Hall of Famer on that team. Not one. It's okay to have a team without a Hall of Famer. It's okay to have a team with one Hall of Famer. But these numbers retired, I don't remember who said it, but somebody this weekend said, well, that's good. In about 20 years, we'll be in triple digits because the Yankees have, every double-digit number retired. They don't even have a number between 1 and 10 available anymore. Not one.
Yeah, but you look at the numbers in the numbers you for the most part in that grouping, Mantle, DiMaggio, Ruth, Jeter. It's a higher caliber of player than a Roger. I don't remember a Roger Maris or a Jorge Posada.
Torrey Posada. I have a hard time with Torrey. I really do. There are a bunch of guys in those retired numbers, and there has been a threshold for some teams. Now, if you look at the Red Sox, I'm understanding I'm going to a different team, but if you look at the Red Sox forever have said, we will not retire a number that is not in the Hall of Fame. That person must be in the Hall of Fame. And they actually went against that for Johnny Pesky. Johnny Pesky had been there 70 years, but I think that makes an exception. But other than that, they will not retire a number who has not been in the Hall of Fame. I have no problem with that. I think that is a good line to draw. I don't think the Yankees have drawn that line at all. That line wavers every time they want to either retire somebody or they're trying to sell tickets. And this year, I think it was all about selling tickets, quite frankly. They did not think that they would have a good team, and they tried to sell tickets. But just my take on it. But anyway, so a little going on with the Yankees, a little going on with the Mets. For those that are interested, the next couple of weeks, we have this week is obviously our fantasy football preview where the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show team itself took a big hit this week. And we'll discuss that in a little bit. And then next week we have our college football preview. And then we have our pro football preview on Labor Day, which will probably be taped on Sunday. But we will get back to that. Or should we go elsewhere at this point? Did I lose
Sorry about
back?
That. You did. Oh, I'm back.
Okay.
Where did I get cut off at?
So I said it's 8:45 at this point. I gave our preview for the next couple of weeks. And my question to you is, are we ready to talk fantasy football? We have an hour and 15 minutes, I think, left. And now would be as good a time to discuss the Seth and Sean Sports Radio team's disastrous week. Because we really did have a disastrous week this week.
We did.
And what's interesting, what's interesting is last week I was debating with Nabate Isles, who is the commissioner of our league, whether we should be keeping Calvin Benjamin or not based on his keeper number. And what's even more interesting was, if you recall last year, we could have traded Calvin Benjamin for Peyton Manning, and we decided not to do it.
Which was kind of busted our... Actually, we only have an hour show this week. I apologize. I set this up.
All right. Well, then we got 33. We got 43 minutes, so we better start on fantasy football.
Yeah. So anyway, it was. You know, our big decision is those of you who listen know we are in a league with Nabate, and we dominated the league last year, only to lose kind of on a fluke in the championship game, which I'm still a little bit bitter about. The advantage we do have is we get to keep three players. Now, our first two are very easy. Le'Veon Bell, who's the top three running back, and Antonio Brown, sorry. The top three wideout. Now, the question was, do we keep Jordy Nelson? Do we keep Kelvin Benjamin? This is an argument that was going on 10,000 miles, 5,000 miles away on IM between Mr. Palmer and myself on IM at 1 o'clock in the morning. My time, probably like 5 p.m. here. And it turned out that the argument was completely irrelevant because both tore their ACLs this week.
Yep. Not
happy. Yeah. No.
Now the debate has changed. So we are allowed to keep our third player. We can keep Greg Olsen. I believe we have him at 9 because you add the 5. So 4 plus 5 is 9. Or we can keep Greg Olsen at 9, or we can keep Emmanuel Sanders, who I still think will be a top wide receiver, don't get me wrong, at I believe it's 33. Now, if we keep Greg Olsen, we have about $180 to play with. Now, our strategy may be that we just go and bid for Emmanuel Sanders up to 30 and see if we can get him, which would be what we would keep at. I think that's a good strategy. That's one that is definitely endorsed by my co-host, Mr. Kamen. I think that is the way that we probably will go. Your thoughts, not that I don't know them already.
Yeah, I mean, Olsen is going to get an enormous amount of throws considering Carolina has no wideouts. And when I mean no wideouts, I mean, can you actually name a wideout on Carolina right now that's playing?
Evan
Funtress. That's not a rookie.
That's not fair. Yes, Jericho Cotchery.
He's played on every other team in the NFL. I guess it makes sense. They also have Ted Ginn Jr. But this is a team.
We might pick.
But we may pick because we do love our punt return and kickoff return numbers. We have a lot of decisions to make, but you know it's nice when you kind of start off with the top running back and the top wideout in the league. So hopefully we'll do as well with this draft this year as we did last year and go forward. There is a lot of interesting stuff out there. Usually there's a consensus number one, number two. There really doesn't seem to be this year. The numbers, it's hard for me. The running backs, pretty much the top five running backs seem to be the top five running backs, Peterson, Lynch, Charles, Lacy, Bell. And then you kind of go into the wideouts. And the wideouts are so extraordinarily deep that it leaves you with a lot of interesting situations. I mean, who would be your number one right now?
Well, I think the consensus would be if Le'Veon Bell did not have a two-game suspension, he would be the number one player in the draft. I think that's a pretty big consensus because I see a lot of the prognosticators have him number one with the two-game suspension. So if he didn't have that, I think he would be a consensus. I really do. He is the cowbell. He rings the bell to that team nonstop, and I think he's the guy. Very happy to have him at a very, very low number this year. I think he is the number one. I think Jamaal Charles is probably number two. I know you don't like DeMarco Murray at all with the share that he will probably have with Ryan Matthews. I do like Matt Forte this year in that Mike Martz offense, which is Adam Gase offense in Chicago. Adam Gase or Mike Martz is there? Why do I remember Mike Martz being there? I don't know. I think it's Adam Gase, though. But anyway,
it is.
It's Adam Gase. So I still like Matt Forte a lot. Again, it's pick your poison, or do you just go straight wide receivers? There are a lot of them, and I know you like DeAndre Hopkins a lot.
I do. Well, not obviously at that level. I mean, let's go quickly by position. I mean, we'll start with the Qs. And, everyone is – people are kind of taking a step back on the quarterbacks in regards to where they should be going. It seems that the 1-2 of Luck, Rodgers, Luck seems to be the consensus. And then anywhere from 3 to 10 is just a cluster of 10 different quarterbacks. So, I mean, in my mind, unless you really, really want Aaron Rodgers, the days of Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and Aaron Rodgers all going in the first round are gone. I mean,
yeah.
I don't see a first round pick for any of these guys. You may go with Rodgers in the second, but mostly I'm thinking Rodgers and Luck are going in the third and fourth, and then everyone else goes lower than that, sixth, seventh, eighth, so on and so forth.
Well, for those that are keeping score at home, we are talking about a snake draft at this point. We're not looking at auction league drafts when we talk like this. So just so you understand. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think the days of those first-round picks are probably gone, depending on whether you're in a 2-QB draft or not. If you're in a 2-QB draft, you may be looking a little bit that way. Not going to say yes or no, but it's a thought process that you may have. The quarterbacks, I think they're not as good, is that there are just a lot of them right now. Look, you do know. I think it's more supply and demand than any other position because you have a lot of wide receivers. You have a lot of quarterbacks. You probably have 10 quarterbacks that could start a fantasy team and you'd be very happy about it. But you don't have a lot of running backs. And I think that's why quarterbacks are being dropped out. I don't think it's a matter of the quarterbacks aren't as good. I think that they are. I just think you have a lot more of them than you ever had before.
Well, that could be true. And running backs have always been the top, in years past, probably going up to 2012, you know, 80% of the time we started running back. And, you know, those days seem to, while they're not over, are not really, it doesn't seem to be how it's working at this point. So who are your top five quarterbacks?
My top five quarterbacks: Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning. And I think I have a tie. I think it's between Tony Romo and Eli Manning. And I like Eli Manning this year a lot. If you told me Eli Manning was our number one, I would not be upset whatsoever. In fact, I'd be very happy with that.
Well, I agree. Well, I don't agree with your top five. I would go Luck, Rodgers, Roethlisberger.
Oh, I wasn't doing them in order. I wasn't doing them in order, but you're right. But Roethlisberger, I agree.
Probably Romo, and then it could be a Matt Ryan, or it could be a Russell, or an Eli Manning, or Russell Wilson. You know, I like Eli Manning for a couple reasons. Number one, obviously, when you have ODB, if Victor Cruz is back at full speed, or even at 85%, with Shane Vereen coming out of the backfield, that's a lot of passing. And then you look at their defensive backfield, where two more safeties tore ACLs, and six of their nine safeties are on DL, are not playing right now. So hence why they're picking up Brandon Merriweather. I'm sure if Kenny easily recovered from his kidney disease, he may be suiting up, even if he is 66 years old. There are going to be a lot of shootouts. Roethlisberger just has a stacked offense, and you know he's just in control of it. For, you know, him and Haley just seem to finally have kind of gotten on the same wavelength last year. Drew Brees scares me. I don't know what they really have, and from a wideout perspective, I know they have Brandon Cooks. Obviously, Jimmy Graham is gone. Stills is gone. Colston, you kind of know what you're getting from him. CJ Spiller has always been kind of a tease as that running back wideout flex position. But I'm not big on him. You know, I do like Romo this year just because I think their wideouts are solid. And, you know, you can't go wrong with a lot of these. Is there a quarterback kind of down the list? Do you have a surprise one that you like?
Well, I'll tell you one guy I don't like, and I don't like at all, Russell Wilson. I am not big on Russell Wilson at all. I understand he got Jimmy Graham. I get that. I'm still not sold on the wideouts. Never happened. Paul Richardson coming back from a torn ACL. I think they're still going to run the ball all the time. So I'm not sold on them at all. If you're looking for a late-round quarterback that you can go with, I like Brian Hoyer in Houston. He won the job today, or at least he got the job today, if he didn't win it. But Mr. Coach O'Brien said he is the quarterback of that team, played in that system before, and I like him. I really do. I think he is... While he's not a one quarterback, like a QB1, he's certainly a QB2 and certainly a bye week filler. And I do like Ryan Fitzpatrick for the Jets. Ryan Fitzpatrick puts up numbers. He always has. Whether they win or not is a different story, but he always puts up numbers.
Yeah, I'll throw another one out there. I like Teddy Bridgewater in Minnesota. Now, I'm a little bit scared with the outdoor stadium, how that's going to impact in November and December, but with North Turner, you're going to have Peterson catching out of the backfield. You have McKinnon. You have a couple other wideouts trying to prove points, and Charles Johnson and Mike Wallace. So I kind of like him as a number two. You know how much I love Joe Flacco, so he would certainly be a number. Okay, I'm kidding. Andy Dalton seems to always get fantasy points. I don't know why. And he's someone you can get in the 11th or 12th round. Plus, as I said, I like Eli Manning this year. Plus, he's in a contract year trying to receive some exorbitant amount of money that he's not worth, in my mind. Even as a Giants fan, I admit this wholeheartedly. But so we'll go from there. Then going from the QBs to the running backs. As I said, it seems to be a consensus. not even a consensus five, maybe a consensus top six of Peterson, Charles, Lynch, Lacy, Bell, and CJ Anderson in Denver. Do you have a number? Who is your number one? Is it now? Remember, you can say Bell, and I'm always talking PPR. I don't know anyone who really does standard leagues at this point, other than well, you. But
We changed this year. The Kappa Kappa Psi Football League, after 18 years of being a standard league, has now gone to PPR. So I no longer think I've had a standard league. Now, lucky for me, yes, lucky for Sean, he made a trade last year where he traded DeMarco Murray, and I don't even remember who the wideout was that I traded, and got T.Y. Hilton and Le'Veon Bell. So I'm a happy camper in making that trade, considering Murray was a first-round keeper and Le'Veon Bell was a second. So I now have a second-round keeper with Le'Veon Bell. But anyway, that being said, do I have a top quarterback, top running back? Yeah, it's Le'Veon Bell. There's no doubt in my mind it's Le'Veon Bell. He is the number one guy, and he should be the number one guy in every league. PPR, standard, anything. I think he's the number one guy. And I would be very hesitant on T.J. Anderson this year. I like him as a running back, but Denver has always, always looked at 30 different options every year. So while he is the guy that is taking the ball, don't be surprised if Ronnie Hillman becomes a vulture, or Monte Ball becomes a vulture, or somebody of that sort becomes a TD vulture, and you may get a little bit left out in the dark with them.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Denver going back to pretty much every season post Terrell Davis in 2000, it seems, or 2001, you know, it's a different running back every year, from Orlandis Gary to Mike Anderson to Clinton Portis to this, to that, to the other thing. And I realize it's a new offense and a new GM and a new coach and all that. But, you know, he scares me a bit too. I love Peterson this year. I do. As much as he hurt me last year, as I drafted him number three overall, I like him catching out of the backfield with Norv Turner, who likes to have his running backs do that. You know, Jamaal Charles maybe can get some help with Jeremy Maclin in there, in Kansas City, because I mean he's obviously a very well-rounded white wide receiver as well, and I like the well-rounded guys, which is why I always kind of hesitate on a Marshawn Lynch. You know, Forsett was phenomenal last year. Do I really see this coming again next year? I don't know. I guess there's really no, you know, he doesn't have that much tread on the tires. There's no reason, I think, to think he wouldn't. I do like Matt Forte this year also, as you said it with Adam Gase. So who's your top five?
Well, I think you've named
them. Or did I just pretty much name them?
Yeah, you pretty much named them. I don't like C.J. Anderson as much as most pundits. Do I think he's the top 10 pick, top 10 running back? Yes. The top 12 pick overall? Yes. But that's only because he will get the ball, at least at the start of the season. Will he continue the ball throughout the season? Not really sure. Nobody is. And remember, they still have Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning's going to throw for 40 touchdowns this year. That means that there are less touchdowns for that running back. So I don't see it the same way. And T.J. Anderson, he's not the guy that catches the ball out of the backfield like all those other top five running backs. I do like LeSean McCoy in Buffalo. I think he will get a ton of touches because I don't think they trust that quarterback as far as I can throw him. And that's a problem because I can only throw about 20 yards.
Yeah, your throwing arm is about as good as your three-point shot.
Agreed.
Okay, anyone – so – overrated C.J. Anderson. Anyone you would want to take a kind of a stab on late? Who intrigues you a little bit?
Stab on late. Yes, Chris Ivory for the Jets. Look, I am the first person to say I've never drafted a Jet. I will probably never draft a Jet, but I like Chris Ivory on the Jets. So for a late round pick, you probably get him around 10 or 11. I like that pick. It's a solid pick. I do like Shane Vereen a lot, but he's got a lot of competition in that backfield. But they didn't sign him to have a big contract to have him sit on the bench either. So the two New York guys I like. Also, Joaquin Bell in Detroit.
Really? Okay, I kind of like the other running back, the rookie Abdullah from Nebraska out of Detroit. I'm curious to see how Todd Gurley, you know, especially in a dynasty league, he may be worth taking a flyer on, even though you don't know when he's going to. I'm not sure what that was. You know, extraordinary.
That was
talent.
Called me going off of Bluetooth because I have
gotcha.
Made it home.
Okay. Going to the wideouts. You have, you know, for years it was Calvin Johnson, A.G. Green, and then kind of everybody else to a degree. And it seems like both of them have taken a step back. Calvin because of injury. A.J. Green just seems to, you know, is consistent, but seems to have been surpassed by Antonio Brown, by Dez Bryant, by Julio Jones. And we talk about Odell Beckham. You know, obviously his talent is overwhelming, but is it too quick of a jump to see him suddenly at the top three, top five wideouts, do you think?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Look, Odell Beckham is a great talent. 1 year, hasn't done it, has been hurt every other year. He was hurt last year. Okay, so he had a great many games, right? And that's fantastic, and I think, you know what, he's got some talent, like I said before. But is he a top guy? I'm not there yet. I'm not sold. Is he better than Calvin Johnson? Definitely not sold. And he's definitely not better than Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant is the number one wideout, hands down.
Over Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I think this year he is. I think this year he is. Now, in a league like ours, where we count punt returns, it's a different story. Because Antonio Brown has the punt returns there. But look, Dez Bryant is more talented than any other wideout in the NFL. I think he has more talent than Calvin Johnson. I also think he stays healthy. So I picked Dez Bryant 1, Antonio Brown 2, then Calvin Johnson 3. And you can put it Odell Beckham 4 because I think after those three, I wouldn't say there's a severe drop-off, but there's a little bit of a drop-off.
I don't know about that. I think Julio Jones, if he stays healthy, is right there. I think Demaryius Thomas is right there. I wonder how Randall Cobb reacts to being the number one wideout now that Jordy Nelson is out for the season with a torn ACL. You know, I worry about Dez Bryant from a, okay, he got the big contract over the summer. Is his motivation still there? What I agree with you. I think he's probably the most talented athlete player in the NFL. Forgetting wide out, he's the most talented player in the NFL. But he scares the living crap out of me. Now,
you should. You should. I mean, look, Michael Irvin scared the crap out of you too, right? Randy Moss scared the crap out of you too, right? I mean, Randy Moss was the most talented player in probably the last 20 years that played football. But he scared the crap out of you to take him in the fantasy league every year because you never knew whether you were getting the Raiders or you were getting the Patriots.
So, anyone kind of on a step back, a rookie, last year was a T.Y. Hilton stepped up. You know, this year is a lot of talk about Mike Evans. You know, my boy DeAndre, I shouldn't say my boy, but I'm a big DeAndre Hopkins fan. Is there a name, you know, I also kind of, you know, even though I'm not huge on Breeze this year, I do like Brandon Cooks as a nice wide out. It's probably a good WR2 down in New Orleans. Is there anyone you're thinking of right now, kind of in that lower tier, whose names has not really popped up? Mr. Palmer.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm sorry about that. I heard a little bit about Mike Evans, and you're right if you said that Mike Evans is a breakout candidate this year. Absolutely. And it kind of brings me to a point that I forgot to make before, where I see James Winston, as Mr. Isles said last week, as a breakout candidate from the quarterback spot. You know he's going to throw, because that team, its secondary is just as bad as the Giants. and not for injury purposes, but they stink. And second of all, he's got probably the best tandem of wide receivers outside of Detroit in the NFL.
I don't know if I would go that high,
give me another tandem. Give me another tandem besides those two. I don't see another one.
Let me think here. Do you take Atlanta with Julio and Roddy White? Or Roddy?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
It seems very strange that would be the number two wideout combo. I guess Green Bay without Nelson isn't that high. It's funny. Just watch Tampa Bay miss an extra point, which we may be seeing more and more of this year. I'm kind of running through the teams quickly in my head. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any, but I cannot imagine there's not a better duo out there that's the best duo in the league for a team.
First of all, I called it the second best duo in the league. I think the best duo is in Detroit with Golden Tate and Calvin Johnson.
Well, who's Dallas's number two right now? Actually, I would take Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders.
Okay. Dallas is number two right now. I have no idea who it is. Terrence Williams?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do it.
Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, that's a good combination. But as far as, look, they are very, very different wide receivers than that of Vincent Jackson and Mike Evans. I'd probably still take those two for fantasy purposes.
Would you look at a T.R. Hilton and a what's his name? Andre Johnson, who I think has a very solid year in Indy.
I agree. Again, I think if you're looking just for football, yeah, I think they're in the conversation. If you're looking for fantasy, no, they're not. Look, Andre Johnson may have 100 catches this year. In fact, it's likely he probably will. T.Y. Hilton also will probably have close to 100 catches this year. But I think you're going to see Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson each have 10 touchdowns at least, because they also have no running game. So, I mean, their running game is Bobby Rainey and, I'm blanking on the hamster.
The muscle hamster.
Yeah. Doug Martin. Doug Martin, who hasn't done anything in the last 2 years. So, I mean, I think for fantasy purposes, they may be.
Look, you can argue Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders.
Okay, fine. They're in the top three. So if they're in the top three of duos, I like them better, and I like Mike Evans, and I've always liked Vincent Jackson.
All right, jumping over to tight ends. Last year was the year where you really started a huge differential between the Gronk and Jimmy Graham. Now, Jimmy Graham being traded to Seattle, does that rejuvenate him and make him threaten for the number one spot, or is that just Gronkowski's as long as he's healthy?
Oh, that's Gronkowski. Look, the number one thing about Gronkowski is his health. We've all established that. If he's healthy, there's nobody touching it. Nobody. I mean, I said this on last week's show with Devontae. I think Jimmy Graham is an overrated player this year, and this coming from the guy that picks Jimmy Graham every year. And I mean every year. I am in the Kappa League. I am picking tight ends in the first or second round every single year. It's been the custom that Sean picks the tight end first in every year. It's been Tony Gonzalez, and then it was Jimmy Graham. That is no longer going to be the case. I think Gronk may be, especially in the PPR league, is a first-round pick. Yes, you heard me. A first-round pick, one of the top 12 players in the draft. And I don't think
even without Tom Brady for the first 4 weeks.
Yeah. First of all, you and I both know that I believe it won't be a four-week suspension. But even if it is, it may actually be more for Gronk than less. Because I think that they're going to throw it to him more than they'll throw it to anybody else. And remember, it's kind of interesting that the four games is in the beginning of the season. I think that's better for Gronk owners too, because it's not bad weather, right? It's general weather. So, yeah, I think he's a top 12 player overall. And then I don't think you should see a tight end pick at least for another 20 picks. So you're looking for the late second, early third. Late second, early third. Late third, early fourth for any tight end thereafter.
At one point, is this the point where Olsen comes into play? Can you see a Greg Olsen jumping Jimmy Graham as number two tight end in football this year?
Oh, I still see it's Jimmy Graham number two. Please don't confuse me. I definitely see Jimmy Graham as the number two. But I think now it's become number one is so far ahead. Then you have 2, 3, and 4, and then maybe it's everybody else. And then 2, 3, and 4, you have your Jimmy Graham, you have your Greg Olsen, you have your Martellus Bennett. You have those types of players, and then you have everybody else. And if you're looking for a late-round guy again, look, Philip Rivers loves Antonio Gates. He may be 35 years old, but last year he had some great games. I wouldn't be hesitant at all to pick him up in the later rounds.
We're not really going to talk too much. I mean, and we apologize. Usually this is a longer apologies, not really needed, but usually it's a longer, more detailed preview. But I am half conscious, and Sean is just driving back. You know, we're not going to, I mean, we can touch quickly on defenses. I mean, I read on Matthew Berry from ESPN that people are taking Seattle as early as the 8th round. Can you please tell people that you never take a defense really until the last 2 or 3 rounds? Because every year, whoever you expect never comes to fruition.
Look, a good defense. Now, there are different leagues. And I'll say in the Nabate Isles League, the defense is a little bit different than any other league. And I say that for the reasoning that I believe in the Nabate Isles League, get points based on the yards, not necessarily only the points given up. So it may be a little different in that league. But in most leagues, it's based on points given up. So you can give up – you could be a bad defense, but be a good fantasy defense, because you have a lot of takeaways and you don't give up a lot of points. But you can be a really bad defense. Defenses are a crapshoot every single year. From week to week, they're a crapshoot. Denver could win 12 games and have the worst defense in football. It's happened. So, worst fantasy defense in football, anyway. Sorry. So, the other thing that most defenses in a fantasy football world count is if Peyton Manning throws an interception and he gets run back by the defense of whatever team he's playing, that counts against your defense. That counts against the Denver defense. It's not separated out. So just be careful when you're picking defenses and kickers, because you never know what you're getting with a kicker. And especially since Blair Walsh has already missed, who was the top kicker the last 2 years, has already missed 3 field goals in the preseason. Those should be your last 2 to 3 picks, absolutely. And Seth and I will not spend more than $3 on the defense or a kicker.
No, we don't. Okay, profound. People want to ask other questions and, have other things they want to talk about. You can always reach out to us on Twitter for Seth and Sports or on our Facebook page. We got about 10 minutes to go. I want to talk about, and I think you got cut off. I was going to bring this up prior to starting the fantasy preview. Now, I've been away for the better part of 2 weeks, and I saw one of the stupidest things I believe I've ever read coming from Chris Carter.
Uh-huh.
Now, I kind of want to make sure that I read this correctly. Did he say that to rookies that everybody who has a posse, one of them should be the fall guy?
That's exactly what he said.
Did I just lose IQ points even repeating that?
Well, here's the thing. Not only did he say it, he said it at the rookie symposium. Not only did he say it at the rookie symposium, but he said it at the rookie symposium when he had his NFL Hall of Fame jacket on as a representative of the NFL. Not only did he do it at the rookie symposium and had his NFL Hall of Fame jacket on, but the guy behind him is a Hall of Famer. His name is Warren Sapp, and all he did was agree with Carter. Now, what you say in private is one thing. And truth be told, look, if that's what he believes, that's what he believes. Seriously, people have fall guys. It's not necessarily the right thing to do, but people do it. But the adults, there are things that need to be said inside and things that need to be said outside. And there are things that don't need to be said at all. If nothing else, this didn't need to be said at all or needed to be conveyed in a different way. And I think you're naive to think that people don't have fall guys.
This is a guy, Chris Carter, who, you know, overcame, you know, cocaine addiction, was indicted for some kind of fraud, I believe, very, very early in his career. Did, you know, and he's been, you know, he's become this reverend, this preacher, and talking about this and that. And, you know, it's taken a lot of credit for the career of Randy Moss, probably more than he should have. And to say something like this is so obscene and so stupid. Yes. Do we know it's true? Yeah, we're not dumb. We all know that, you know, if you have a group of nine, that there's probably one or two who's going to be holding the pot or holding the coke. We know this. But to actually say this in a public symposium, you know, I don't expect a lot from Warren Sapp in that regard. I think, didn't Sapp declare bankruptcy and was arrested last year and he's had his own personal problems. Probably could have used a fall guy. But to say this on the NFL network, to say this in a public place just blows my mind and blows a lot of credibility, because I don't know how you undo this. I don't know how you can, you're not misquoted because it's pretty much been on television or on video. I don't even know where you go with this. Now, does this impact his job with ESPN, do you think?
Oh, yeah.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
You think, now, did something happen? I don't know.
No, I think, could it happen? Yeah. Could it impact? Absolutely. Could he lose his job? Yes. He absolutely could lose his job. Look, the NFL has been in bed with ESPN for the last couple of years, and if the NFL said fire him, I don't think ESPN would blink. I think they would say, okay, bye. Really do. That being said, do I think he will lose his job? No. Look, worse things have been said. Worst things have been said about concussions, right? Worst things have been said about Roger Goodell. And people haven't been fired. They've been suspended. Who in the NFL.com thought about putting this on their website? That guy should be gone. Like, really gone. All too well.
It may have gotten more hits on the website than anything else has over the last couple of years. So maybe that's the rationale behind it. I don't really have an answer for you.
So we got 5 minutes left. I wanted to touch upon one more thing before we say our goodbyes. Just so you know, breaking news is that Justin Wilson, an IndyCar driver, passed away from the head injury sustained at the Pocono Raceway on Sunday. Look, I get NASCAR. I get Indy racing. I get that it's fun to drive at certain speeds, but at some point, And Seth, I know you've been to a NASCAR race. I know you enjoy the sport or whatever you call it. If you want to call it a game, if you want to call it a sport, whatever you want to call it. But we have a lot on the table in the sports world about injuries and concussions and whatnot. when is enough enough for Indy and NASCAR? Because to me, you have at least a death every year, or at least that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I did attend a couple years ago a race at Dover, and it was a lot of fun. One with a couple of fraternity brothers, one of which, or two of which you are now familiar with, having met them down in Puerto Rico. But, you know, it's a sport that I follow, but I don't watch it the best way. Like, I know what's going on up to a certain point, but I don't, I certainly wouldn't call myself an expert. And I have, you know, it seems like when you're having a fatality a year, or a fatality every, or two fatalities every 3 years, which seems to be about the, you know, obviously, you know, I can't tell you what's right and what's wrong with it. I don't know the sport well enough, but when it's this high of a percentage, obviously there are things that need to change. I can't give you the specifics because it would be kind of silly for me to talk about it.
I just know that you and I talk about death in football and concussions in football and CTE in football. And look, NASCAR is more popular than football. I mean, as far as fans going to events, it's more popular. On a per-event basis, there are more fans at NASCAR events than I believe at any other sport or game in the country every year. And I think the fact that there is a death a year is one death too many. But anyway, so as I digress. Okay, so we got about three more minutes. Again, next week we will have a college football preview, which will actually be right before the Nevada Iowa's draft. And then the next week, Labor Day weekend, we will have our NFL preview. We have about 3 minutes left. This, again... You know, last week I talked about my uncle a little bit. My uncle actually passed away this past weekend. He was an unbelievable guy, a really, really tough year for the Palmer, Moskow, and Bayer clan. Just overall, just a really tough year. And you know what, to come and do this every single week, to come out of a funeral and know that I had a show tonight really picked up my spirits. So to all you guys that are listening out there, sorry, and you females listening out there, really thank you for the support and everything that you do for us every week. And we love doing this show. And obviously, we wouldn't be here without you. So thank you very much. Seth, you're up.
Yeah, there's not too much really for me to follow on that. Obviously, my condolences to you and the family. It certainly has not been the easiest year for you. And, you know, I think we talk about this a lot. We do appreciate you know, everyone that listens. I mean, most of you listen on archive, listen when you're at work, when you're on the road, whatever. And, you know, we have a lot of fun. And, you know, it's why after being up for 22 and a half hours, why I'm still doing the show on a Monday. Because I am exhausted, but it is fun. And I get to talk sports with the most knowledgeable guy I know, who happens to be my best friend. So, you know, what more can you ask for? So next week, college football preview, U.S. Open, probably a little bit more about the Mets, I'm sure. Woohoo. And we'll go from there. So for Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamens, the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show, blog, talk radio, backsportspage.com. You can download us off of iTunes or off of the Facebook or off of Twitter. Have a good week, everybody. Bye.
You too, Seth. Get some sleep. See ya.